Coming up on today's program.
StoryCorps wanted to do something about the division, like a lot of us did, and they had this conversation model that they had perfected. So they said, well, this is what we can do.
WISO's One Small Step series is ready to roll. We'll take that step first in our program. I'm Jerry Kenney. This is WISO Weekend.
As always, thanks for sharing your weekend with WISO and sharing some studio space with us is Will Davis, director of the Eichelberger Center for Community Voices here at WISO. Will, thanks so much for stopping by.
Oh, thank you for having me. I always love being in the studio with you.
So last time we talked, or one of the last few times we talked, there was a program, a series of stories just getting underway from the Eichelberger Center, and it is One Small Step. It's my understanding that those conversations have all taken place, and that series will begin airing on WISO soon.
It will. This is together with StoryCorps. WISO joined with them, and we did this project called One Small Step, which was about bringing together strangers to find a connection. And we have been recording conversations since the summer. We recorded 25 conversations. That was our goal. We met our goal, and that means 50 participants. So 50 strangers in our community came together and met each other and talked for an hour about whatever they wanted to talk about. We completed the recordings, and now, beginning on the 28th of January, on Wednesday, we'll start to hear those conversations, excerpts from those conversations, and it's really fun.
You mentioned the last time we spoke about the experience during the first run on this series where you were working at another place in Tennessee.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you mentioned the impact that it had on you.
Yeah, I did this project before when I was working at the University of Tennessee, and it was so impactful to me and to the participants. You know, what was different this time, I facilitated every one of them in Tennessee, and so I met with every single person that participated. I was in the studio with them. I shared that responsibility this time with Ryan Beechler, who our listeners may know that name, and also with Chris Welter, who's my partner in the Center for Community Voices. So I facilitated some of them, but not all of them. But yeah, Jerry, you know, when you see people, it's such a peculiar and a lovely project, because when you see two people who have never met before come together and have a very intimate conversation, and how they communicate and how it moves them and what they take away from it. And, you know, too, when it's over, how they're like exchanging numbers and email addresses and they want to keep in touch. It's just kind of like lovely. It gives you faith in humanity. You know, it's I hope this doesn't come out wrong, but it's kind of like you get to like eavesdrop on a blind date or something. You know, you're a fly on the wall. And are these people going to, you know, they're going to connect? They're going to get along together? Are they going to make each other laugh? Are they going to challenge each other? It's just like really fun, for one thing. But then also it really does give you faith in humanity.
Especially when you consider the wide variety of personalities and talents and values that people bring to the table.
It was. You know, this is it wasn't really a project about politics, I guess. It was created by StoryCorps just after the 2016 election, when people were really getting divided, you know, and StoryCorps wanted to do something about the division, like a lot of us did. And they had this conversation model that they had perfected. So they said, well, this is what we can do. We usually bring together, you know, loved ones and have these conversations that we hear here on Friday. But for this project, One Small Step, let's bring together strangers and talk about politics. That's how it began. But it evolved into something else. Many people chose to talk about politics, but a lot of the people that participated didn't. You know, once they got together and they were matched based upon their differences and their similarities, they could talk about whatever they wanted to talk about. And it was interesting to see some people really lean into a conversation about this moment in time in America right now. And others just wanted to talk about something else, grief or a new job or their children. People really made the time and the space their own. And you learn a lot about people when they have an hour together. What did they talk about?
And so when you think of the title One Small Step, tell us how that fits into the premise of this series.
I think the mission of the project was to take one small step. You know, StoryCorps wanted to do something about the division. A lot of people want to do something about the division, and they don't know what to do. And so the idea is, well, this is one small step. You know, to bring America together, it's a David versus Goliath battle. It's going to take a lot of conversations to bring us together now. But what do? You can't just say, well, I'm not going to do anything. And this is one small step toward connecting with somebody who is different from you. Yeah, it's a lovely project. It's wonderful. I've learned so much, and I think our listeners will have a similar experience when they hear it. I feel like I've made 50 new friends.
Yeah. In just the minute or so that we have left, tell us the details. When does the series start and where they can listen?
It will start on Wednesday, January 28th, and they will play during Morning Edition and All Things Considered. And then, of course, it'll be online on our website as well, wyso.org.
All right. We'll run them on the weekend show here.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Will Davis with the Eichelberger Center for Community Voices. If you're listening to us now, keep an eye out for One Small Step, the next great series from WYSO. Will, thanks so much.
Thank you. It's always fun.
Up next on WYSO Weekend, Dayton's city commissioners will review recommendations to initiate more safety measures in downtown's Central Business District. The recommendations are from the Downtown Dayton Safety Work Group. WYSO's Catherine Mobley has more.
The Downtown Dayton Safety Work Group is made up of political, business leaders, and some nonprofits pooling their resources to enhance the safety of Dayton's Central Business District. Spearheading this initiative is Ohio's 10th District Congressman Mike Turner.
This is going to take a coordinated approach from everyone to ensure that downtown remains safe, that the investment that we've made remains safe, that downtown remains our focus of a place for our community to gather and enjoy.
The Central Business District is comprised of Webster Station, Oregon District, part of Midtown, and downtown proper.
Downtown is safe. I frequent downtown a lot outside of work hours, and I feel like downtown's safe.
Dayton Police Deputy Chief Eric Henderson describes himself as a lifelong Daytonian, acknowledging a downtown urban core brings challenges. However, according to Henderson, the department is managing those challenges with numerous strategies, such as hotspot policing.
It's analyzing data, seeing where your crime hotspots are, and spending additional time. Research has shown just spending 15 minutes in an area every hour may help reduce crime. Looking at repeat offenders, you can work with probation department or with the court system if they're committing the crimes because they have an addiction. You know, are we addressing that addiction? Things like that. It's dealing with graffiti to show how they're harming the community.
And Henderson says the department's multi-level approach is making Dayton's Central Business District safer. WYSO obtained police data that shows last year there were 58 violent crimes in the area. In 2024, there were 79. The year before, that number was 73. With regard to property incidents in the same area, last year there were 316 property crimes. The year prior, there were 410. In 2023, there were 412 incidents. Wednesday morning, Dayton City Commissioners voted to review the recommendations from Turner's Downtown Dayton Safety Work Group. City Commissioner Darius Beckham is part of the group and says despite decreasing crime stats, the safety group is proactively trying to change how the average person sees downtown.
I think there's a perception that our city at times struggles with safety. Criminal activity, it's decreasing. But I think this is a conversation about how to ensure that there are no further or no future problems as it relates to safety and unwanted criminal behavior downtown.
The group's recommendations fall into four categories. Justice and policing suggest implementing a communication system so private security providers can talk with each other and to Dayton police, urging the Montgomery County Sheriff to provide security to county properties in downtown, and building a substation to increase patrols there. During the public comment period, some Dayton residents objected to these suggestions. Berkeley Moore fears the last idea could actually hurt surrounding neighborhoods.
While increasing police presence in downtown, how would that affect our neighborhoods? Does that mean the police presence in other parts of the city will be decreased?
The group also wants the downtown RTA to create its own security at its downtown hub and for the Dayton Municipal Court to create a docket to hear cases only from this area. Ebony Hastings questions the validity of this idea.
Dayton Municipal Courts does not have the capacity to have a docket separate for what is going on in downtown Dayton. We need real-time communication with the residents.
The second category is social services. This subset recommends limiting group homes through code enforcement, enforcing existing codes and ordinances on retail establishments where criminal behavior occurs, creating a list of after-school programs for students who rely on the RTA to get to and from school, getting an accurate count of the unhoused population in the Central District, and creating a comprehensive inventory of social services. Lynn Lamant says she's worried about how unhoused people will be treated.
When the homeless or the poor are legitimately in downtown Dayton, are they going to be targeted?
The Intergovernmental Subcommittee recommends representatives from all levels of government meet on a regular basis to discuss issues and pending projects, as well as policies that encourage businesses to move downtown. Commissioner Beckham says this kind of growth is vital.
We want to just continue to grow, you know, our business center, because we know without a strong economic base that is usually located in downtowns, we cannot increase the income tax dollars that we use to support our neighborhoods.
The final subcommittee suggests actions for the business community to create an economic development and redevelopment fund, encouraging capital investments, as well as reviewing the existing business groups and streamlining them. Jason Woodward is part of this subcommittee. He's also founder of Woodward Development. It has 15 downtown properties. He advocates getting more workers to return to downtown offices.
Pre-COVID, we had a very full office population. We had a lot of people on the streets, you know, from 8 to 5. And then post-COVID, you know, we've seen a decline in the number of people that are in the office on a daily basis. The more people that we get downtown, the more you realize it's safe and it is an upward spiral.
The Downtown Dayton Safety Work Group says no tax dollars or funding is required to act on these recommendations. Dayton City Commissioner Daryl Fairchild is encouraged by what this group has brought to the table and hopes other neighborhood leaders follow their example.
This sets a precedent and a model for how to bring concerns around safety to the commission. And then we can make decisions in the best interest of the whole city in terms of those recommendations.
All the while, Dayton resident Ebony Hastings extends this caution to Dayton's political and business leaders.
When we rely on perception, it leads to misinformed choices. So clarify the perception with verifiable evidence to anchor plans and factual assessments surrounding downtown Dayton.
Montgomery County commissioners are also reviewing the group's suggestions. Reporting for WYSO News, I'm Catherine Mobley.
You can find more of Catherine's reporting on our website at WYSO.org. I'm Jerry Kenny. Up next on WYSO Weekend, songwriter Harold Hemsley has performed with the Repeating Arms and as a solo artist. His latest project, Harold Hemsley and Still Life Drive, features a more electrified sound with folk and roots at its core. Hensley recently visited WYSO to debut a new song from the band on Kaleidoscope and talked with host Juliet Frumholt. Here's a bit of their conversation and some music.
Harold, I want to talk for a second about this band, because this has been something that's been percolating and growing, and I've gotten to see you guys a couple of different times now, especially at Wagner Subaru Outdoor Experience. What has it been like to get to kind of grow with this particular band, because you've been a solo guy, you've been a band guy, but This is kind of a little different than other bands I've known you to be in.
So it all started out with I asked all of them if they would be available to help me release my record when Sad Songs from Ohio came out, and they were all available. We did a few rehearsals. They're super they're pros. I'll just say that they're all pros, and they do the work at home, like woodshedding is what we call it in the music world. And I just really love playing with them. And I can throw ideas at them. It doesn't matter how weird it is or like whatever. And they can like come up with parts, like really good parts. And, so like I was saying earlier about the electric guitar, you know, I used to play like heavier stuff back in the day and be in punk bands and all of that stuff. And, I was like, you know, I need to add a little edge to what I'm doing. And so I've been throwing these songs at him, and it's turned into a thing. Like, I'm like, so you guys aren't going to dump me, right? Like, you're going to be my band. We're gonna give it a name, so you have to be in my band. You know, but Dan Stahl, one of my favorite drummers from Shrug, like, well, he's in not a million bands, but he's in a lot of stuff now. Like, always been one of my favorite drummers, and to like have him be in the engine back there is like, I hate that he has to stare at my backside, but I didn't want to put him in the back, you know, but I think he likes it back there. He likes to hide. But and then the Spoggies, like, just so tasteful, and they just have a way of pushing each other. I guess it's the mm-hmm. brother, the twin thing or whatever. And then, you know, of course, David and I have worked together on a lot of stuff, and it just seemed appropriate that we were going to be in a band together finally. You know, like, we're actually in a band together. So I'm really loving it. We're working on a full-length record at Real Love right now. We've got tracking done with maybe about 4 or 5 songs, something like that. But it's going to be a full-length, self-titled, Still Life Drive. And I can't get enough of it. Like, anything I, like, send them, like, this weird little, I'm like, I'm making demos all the time, I promise. And I'll send it to them, and they actually like it. They want to play the song. So I'm going to keep them if I can, you know. They said they wouldn't dump me, so. We'll see how that goes.
We've said it on the radio, so now they can't do it.
Yeah, they can't.
You guys are locked in.
Yeah. But it's been a really great experience getting to, you know, write songs for – I've always said that, like, I write solo songs, and I would write arm songs back in the day. And, you know, like, this whole thing is kind of, like, out of my element, really. Like, learning how to find a tone on a guitar amp again, like – what pedals do I need to make that sound? You know, like, that's all stuff that I am kind of like, you know, out in the desert on. Like, I had no idea, and they're able to help me with that stuff too. They're all gearheads, so it's pretty nice experience so far. Yeah,
I was gonna ask what it has been like for you as a songwriter to work with this band in particular, and to work with this more fully electric sound. Like, are you kind of sending things to them and having them kind of realize the full sound of them? Are you starting to hear their parts in your head?
I am. Actually, everything you said, like, I am actually writing in a way now where I'm like, okay, if I play this part, like, what's Dan going to play on mm-hmm. on the electric? And I want to give him room to do all the beautiful stuff that he does. And but I'm thinking in that way now. Like, before, I was just, you know, this is my part, and they're just going to make what I'm doing better. But it's like, I'm looking at it as an actual band now, where it's like, I want them to have their own input. Like, what do they like? What do they think it should sound like? And the writing process has been really cool. It's like, just opened up a whole new world, and like going to a realm that I normally wouldn't dabble in. You know, I'm like, I'm going to turn this up a little louder and see how it breaks up. And maybe it's too loud, but, you know, they haven't said that yet. But it's been a really, really great experience, like, getting to know them musically too. Like, I've loved their bands for a long time and loved their writing and all that stuff. But to, like, actually hang out with them and do rehearsals and try to get all of our schedules together, that's the weird thing. And what you're saying, like, I'm able to just throw a song at them. Like, I want to play this at the next gig, you know, we'll get one rehearsal in. I know that sounds crazy, and that scares the crap out of me, because I'm that guy that has to, like, rehearse. You know, I don't like to just get up there and wing it and jam, you know. But they always come in with, like, killer parts. Like, they're like, oh, I was thinking, do you like this one or this one? And sometimes they have multiple things to choose from. And I'm like, this is it's like choose your own adventure or something, you know. It's been really great.
You have brought a new song with you.
So this was one of the first songs that I didn't really have a home for. And I could hear all these things happening that I couldn't do myself in the studio, and where they're already backing me up and saying they're wanting to be my band. I, like, just pitched it at a – it was really strange. We were rehearsing for something else, and I just started playing it, and they all just, like, fell in and started playing the parts that you're about to hear, which blew my mind. The lyrics and everything, just, like, I feel like what they're doing with the, you know, the steel guitar parts, and, like, even the bass line, the way it rides, like – It was like a song that I thought about and wrote all the lyrics while I was driving mostly. And it, I don't know, it seems like a driving song to me. It's just been such a cool, I can't say it enough. It's been such a cool experience to work with these guys. And, this is like the first, our little baby that we're, giving out to the world, so, or releasing out into the world. So I hope everyone likes it. They're not like, where's all those electric guitars? What's all that going on? But yeah,
this is an electric guitar friendly audience.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. David produced it, played Hammond on it. He, he's in the band and stuff. And then Tim Pritchard mastered it, and it's hot off the presses. So, yeah.
Let's take a listen to this brand new music from Harold Hensley and Still Life Drive. This is called Devil Below. Harold, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me again. I love coming up here. It's amazing.
Absolutely. And thanks for sharing this song. Let's take a listen.
Harold Hensley and Still Life Drive, as heard on Kaleidoscope with host Juliet Frumholt. I'm Jerry Kenny. You're listening to WISO Weekend. Thanks so much for joining us. In our final edition of Veterans Voices for the season, Army veteran Veronica Shields found art after the pandemic. Our series host is Zach Sliver.
When Veronica Shields graduated high school, she didn't have a clear plan for what came next. Still, growing up in a military family made joining the service feel like the natural next step. And looking back, it was the right call.
Well, going into the military was probably the best thing I could have done at that time in my life. My mother had been in, she was a WASP in World War II, and my uncle had been currently in the Army, so I decided to do that. And I was a pharmacy technician, been to Fort Sill, Oklahoma, Fort Belvoir, Virginia. I then was transferred to Korea, and I got to meet many people, both in the military and the South Koreans also. I taught two South Korean women. I helped them with their English. They took me to their home, which was out in the country, and I really have a soft spot for the South Korean people. They're just wonderful. And this was in 77 and 78. So we're only 20 years out of the Korean War, and it was very, hadn't been built up quite a lot yet. So I lived on post with three other people. It was great. I mean, the camaraderie, I think, in the military is the one thing that most people have problems with when they get out, because you lose those connections.
Around the time of the pandemic, Veronica enrolled in a few online art classes, and they open up the door to new forms of creative expression and to a community of fellow veteran artists.
I started beading, and then I just kind of started playing around with other kinds of crafts. So that's how I got into it. And then it opened my mind and my interests to other types of art. I like blacksmithing. I make real unusual hooks and things, stone carving. I do some wood carving, but I'm not that great at it. I still do make some jewelry, and I'm getting into more of the finer metalsmithing. I wrote a song also. That was pretty cool. Stoked about that. It's such a nice way for us to not only express ourselves, but communicate the differences that we feel or we have with other people. But I think it's the expression of being able to express ourselves in whatever way we can, because in other venues or other types of communication, it doesn't always come out quite right. But when you look at a piece of art, maybe it's your interpretation, but I got to say what I did, or, you know, say what's in me, and I put it on paper, steel, stone. I'm a disabled veteran, so I have a little bit more, what can I say, free time to do what I want to do with my art or other aspects of my life.
To Veronica, art becomes a way to bring veterans and civilians together, showing that behind the uniform, we're no different than anyone else.
I mean, I know some people, you know, think that veterans are just everyday people, and they don't have any different types of wounds that either physically or mentally that they have. And then there's other people that love veterans and accept us for our little quirks that we may have. And my big hope is to be kinder to each other, but also to know that veterans are just like everybody else, really. You know, somebody may have had an experience as a civilian that's different than a veteran having an experience as a military. But I don't see how those can't merge together a little more as far as seeing veterans as a positive addition to, you know, our integration with each other as humans, really. That's all.
Veterans Voices is presented by WrightPath Credit Union. Additional support comes from the Dayton Ombudsman Veterans Transition Team and Montgomery County Veterans Service Commission.
This is Bird Note. A male western tanager chirps loudly from the branch of a Douglas fir. The tanager's tune is as sharp as his brightly colored red head. With a yellow body jacketed in black, the western tanager is a flash of bright color in the coniferous forests of the West. Sounds almost like a robin, doesn't it? Western tanagers dart from tree to tree on the lookout for delicious bugs. They find them by scanning the tree bark, or maybe snatching them from midair during flight, a tactic called hawking. Nuts and fruits round out this little songbird's diet. The western tanager can breed farther north than any other North American tanager, as far up as southeast Alaska and the Yukon. But come winter, these little birds head south. The male's red head fades to yellow in the off-season. Still, the tanager's sharp, colorful suits help them fit right in with the other brightly colored tropical birds they'll spend the winter with in Mexico and Central America. Head over to our website and catch more on the Western Tanager, birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann. BirdNote gives you the sounds of birds every day, and you get the sights as well when you follow us on Instagram, at BirdNote Radio.
BirdNote, putting a bookend on our program today. I'm Jerry Kenny. Thanks so much for sharing your weekend with WISO. This program is available as a podcast to download and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Our theme song is Another Beautiful Day in Paradise by Magnolia Bolthead. I'm Jerry Kenny. We'll have more highlights and conversations for you next weekend. Please join us then.